I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. We're going to do something a little bit different today. We're going to go back to some of the voters we talked to in the months leading up to the November election. You might remember that 12-part series of voter roundtables we had. Well, since then, there's been the actual election, delayed results, false claims about voter fraud, and a violent insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, and a historic second impeachment of President Trump. So today we're bringing several of those voters back to talk about how they see this moment, and more importantly, to hear how Americans can talk with each other. And that's the part that's going to be a little bit different today, because I'm going to have some help. The United States, it feels more than a little bit like a conflict zone right now, or at least a nation seized by intractable political conflict. So we're going to have someone alongside today who has facilitated hard conversations in difficult places. And he's Lucas Johnson, executive director of the public radio show On Being's Civil Conversations and Social Healing Project. He was previously international coordinator for the International Fellowship of Reconciliation, a century-old peace-building organization. And he joins us today from Amsterdam in the Netherlands. Lucas, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you. It's good to be here.
So first of all, let me just ask you, Lucas, to sort of set the table for this conversation. How similar does the political tensions and perhaps even the inability to talk across divides that it feels like we have here in the United States, how similar does that strike you as to other places that you've done this kind of work before?
Well, I think that one of the dynamics that I feel like we have to understand as Americans is that we're not used to thinking of ourselves as a place of conflict, but there have been long simmering. I like to sort of describe it as like a there's been low level violence in the country for a long time, and there are long issues that we've not really confronted or spoken to each other about. And in some ways, the violence that we see is the product of recent events. And in some ways, it's the product of things that have been going on for a long time. And I think one of the differences between our context and other contexts in the world is that, you know, many other countries are just more aware of the fact that they are developing a democracy, or more aware of the fact that that democracy is not something that you can take for granted, that it takes difficult work every day and a sort of vigilance. And I think that that's something that we're just now, I think, coming to realize. I think we've taken a lot of the principles and structures and mechanisms of our democracy and our culture of democracy for granted.
Mm. Well, so I am really grateful that you can listen along with me to the voters that we're going to have back here over the course of this hour. In fact, I invite you to do even more than just listen along, Lucas. I would love to hear how you approach these conversations. So please do feel free. You can be my co-host for today. I would like to I'd like to learn from you on how to facilitate conversations across differences and sometimes very deeply felt differences. So today, Lucas Johnson is On Point co-host, if you're willing to play that role.
Thank you. I'm honored.
I'll do my best. Well,
let's
start by bringing in a couple of these voters. So joining us from Erie, Michigan is Lupe Harpster. She's the owner of several restaurants in Erie. She joined us for the voter roundtable we did with Americans who had either lost loved ones to COVID or had suffered from COVID themselves. Lupe's businesses have been impacted by the pandemic, and also she was hospitalized with COVID for almost a month, including 10 days on a ventilator. Lupe, thanks for coming back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us from Virginia Beach, Virginia, is Danielle Anderson. She joined us on our roundtable with military veterans. She's a former naval officer and chief strategist at the nonprofit Black Veterans Project. Danielle, welcome back to you.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Okay, so Lucas, I'm actually going to hand you the baton here to start. What's the first question, or how do we enter this conversation with Lupe and Danielle?
Well, I'm wondering, I think one of the things that's important for us is we often have conversations where we're talking around, I think, the things that matter, not necessarily talking about the things that matter. And so one of the questions that I would ask both Lupe and Danielle is, and aside from, you know, how they are and how they're doing in the midst of all that we're dealing with, is what did the experiences of the last week evoke in you? A lot of people talk about how it was frightening, and I'm wondering whether or not it brought up experiences of fear, or what it actually made them feel.
Right. Well, Lupe, do you want to go ahead and answer that?
Sure, I'll start with that. In all honesty, it brought up feelings of anger towards everything that has happened that I think brought this to a head, so to speak. I meant I felt like it was coming. I didn't expect what to happened, but I could understand how people felt because I felt angry.
Can you tell me a little bit more, Lupe? And what exactly were you angry at?
Sure. I was angry at the people who were doing what they were doing because I am a Republican, and I felt like, they made the party look bad. I don't think it helped our situation any. If anything, it made it worse. I was hopeful at the beginning of this hearing. Maybe it was false hope or something that was put in there that wasn't attainable. But that's what I had going into this, was hope, as I was watching what was happening. And then when I saw what happened, I was angry at those people. I was angry at everything that happened prior to this, the last several years.
So just to be clear, when you said you were hopeful that you at the beginning of when they were doing the electoral count of the votes in Congress, that's what you're talking about. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so Danielle, do you want to? I'd love to hear from you about how the feelings that it evoked in you.
Yeah, I think it was. Unfortunately, it was something that I couldn't have predicted. But I certainly suspect it could happen. I think that, the last few years, a lot of people have, talked about, and there's even a book written about it, How Democracies Die. And I think that, elected officials gradually sort of subverting democratic processes, to kind of increase their power. And it's something that, a great many political scientists and other people have sort of talked about, and how that, can play out in this experiment that we call our democracy. So for me, it was really eye-opening, and it was really a call to sort of put perhaps party politics and personal feelings to the side, and to understand that our sort of democratic republic is at stake here, and it has been for the last 4 years.
Lucas, go ahead.
Yeah. So Danielle, you talk about what was at stake, and can you say a little bit more about what you feel has been at stake in the last 4 years?
Yeah. I think that what we're seeing over the last 4 years, certainly started before what happened at Charlottesville, but we've seen sort of a president who, at least if he doesn't violate the letter of the law, he violates sort of the spirit of the law. We put a lot of faith and trust in our democratically elected, officials that they hopefully hold, our democracy to the same sacredness that we do ourselves. And so for me, it's largely been pretty disappointing and at times angering to kind of see the ways in which processes that we've long held as truthful kind of be subverted or be questioned, including this you know, election. So for me, it was very disappointing, and I think even more so disappointing that more people weren't pointing out, not that this is, you know, that President Trump is doing a bad thing, so to speak, but that this bad thing is actually sort of ripping apart the fabric of our democracy. So for me, it was largely disappointing, not really directed at President Trump, but largely at our electorate, our elected officials who sort of enabled him, and the rhetoric not only of the past, you know, 2 months or so, you know, since the election results came out, but I think before then he is managed to question people and processes and things that have never really been questioned before.
Yeah. Lupe, we've just got a minute to go before the break, so I'm going to let you I want you to start answering that same question about what you think, what you feel is at stake here, but then we'll take the break and then I'll let you finish. But go ahead. What do you feel when you hear Danielle describing what she thinks is at stake here regarding trust in our democracy? Do you think that's what's at stake too?
Well, I totally agree with her. Yes, I do. I feel it for a couple of different reasons. I understand her feelings about President Trump. He was different. He didn't do things the norm of the political people do there. He went off tracks. He went off the rails there. And I liked it, though. I liked the way he did what he did. Some things, no, I did not like what he did. But I think he made progress.
Well, Lupe Harpster and Danielle Anderson and Lucas Johnson, hang on here for just a second. We will be back in about a minute. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are going back to several of the voters that we talked to over the second half of 2020 to try to convene a conversation, especially after the attacks on the Capitol on January 6th, the historic second impeachment of President Donald Trump. And I'm joined today by Lucas Johnson. He's executive director of the On Being's Civil Conversations and Social Healing Project. He's kind of serving as my co-host here today because he has a lot of experience in facilitating challenging conversations in hard places. And right now we're talking to two of our voters that we heard from before. Danielle Anderson is with us from Virginia, and Lupe Harpster is with us from Michigan. And Lupe, I wanted to just ask you a quick question before I sort of hand it back to Lucas here. But you said that that some of the things that the president did that really shook up the system, that you liked it. What in particular did you like it? Did you like, and why?
Well, I liked it that he continued to fight for what he believed in instead of, honestly, I feel like a lot of us, especially in the business, we just sit back and let things happen to us. The closings were still closed. But he was fighting for what he believed in. That's what I liked about him. And I've liked that about him all along.
But specifically, what did you see him as believing in? What were those things he was fighting for?
Well, I think he believed that there was an injustice done to him. He fought for it. I think a lot of us people were fighting for that injustice.
You mean about the election results?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Well, that's still what comes to mind at this point right now. But I just felt like he was a fighter, and I like that about him, that I like that he wasn't a, quote, politician.
Uh-huh. So, Lucas,
I do agree with Danielle, though, about violating the spirit of the law. I think in the end, that's, you know, what really turn people against him.
So I'm wondering, you know, I want to kind of move the conversation away from President Trump. And I'm wondering how both you, Lupe, and Danielle would answer this question. Thinking about what's at stake for all that we hope we will be as a country. Who do we need to be to each other?
Danielle, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. It's actually a really good question, Lucas. I think that, you know, there have been a lot of calls for, you know, bringing people together, especially in light of this second impeachment, and trying to bring, you know, voters and just really Americans together. But I would say, I'm not sure who we need to be to each other, but I think that we need to do things in the spirit of upholding in our democracy and sort of continuing to perfect our union. I'm, you know, of no illusion that we have a sort of perfect union and perfect democracy here. But I also am of no illusion that those of us who continue to sort of keep that at the forefront, and by that I mean our democracy, it may not always result in, you know, quote unquote, us coming together as Americans. You know, unfortunately, I mean, this is sort of what we've seen in the last few weeks. I like that you said sort of taking President Donald Trump out of it. I think, you know, that's really apropos because he is not our democracy, although he is sort of at the head of it. But what we've seen, you know, lately is are people putting sort of their own, whether it's single issue or things like that, sort of above what's best for our entire country. So I'm not really sure what I would say to that, but I certainly would say that we need to keep our democracy at the forefront.
And Lupe, what do you think? What do we need to be to each other?
Well, I can tell you what I've seen. I've seen separation of family, separation of friends due to this, each treating each other as if belittling each other. It's been pretty ugly for the last few years, I feel. I think what we need to be to each other is respectful of our opinions and our beliefs, and we don't get that. Mm-hmm. We get that the left feels the right are stupid and the right feels the left are trying to take us into socialism, whether that's true or not. And the name calling, it's been ugly. It's been very, very ugly here, especially the last few months.
Yeah. So. Well, Lupe Harpster, restaurant owner in Erie, Michigan, thank you so much for coming back to the show.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And Danielle Anderson, former naval officer, speaking to us from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Thank you as well for coming back and talking through things with us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So
it was a pleasure to talk to you both.
Yeah. Lucas, before we move to the next pair of voters here, I wanted to ask you, why did you think it's important to ask that particular question that you did about what do we need to be to each other?
Well, part of the reason why I think that's important is because we have a tendency to often speak in, you know, representing sort of collective senses of collective groups of identities. And so we speak on behalf of President Trump, or we speak on behalf of Republicans or Democrats, or we speak on behalf of the left or of the right. And part of what I think that we need to do, and what the way that we need to reorient ourselves towards the political process in this country, is to be able to understand that that when we're speaking to each other, we're not speaking to systems per se. We're speaking to human beings in front of each other who have needs and hopes and aspirations and fears. And part of what we need to understand is that a part of being a citizen in a democracy means that we need to be able to have certain levels of expectations of each other, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the other, you know, framings is to say, is to be able to say, this is who I need you to be for me in order for us to participate together in this process, right? And I think that's what we need to kind of get back to. That's what we need to reorient ourselves towards. Like, who do we need to be to each other in order for us to actually share the country, in order for us to exist together as Americans?
Well, so I would say that has been made challenging, or even more challenging, by the fact that we are not systems, but we are also communicating with each other through some very dehumanizing systems like media and technology. And we heard from an On Point listener, Alexis, from Massachusetts, who left us this message for her fellow Americans.
If you're listening to people that are making you just feel fearful and distrustful of your neighbors, then maybe you should put down your phone, log off of social media, try to listen to people who give you hope. And my hope is that we can all just come together and, you know, realize it's okay to not all think the same exact thing, but that doesn't mean we have to burn down the house. It just means we need to listen to each other more in order to move forward together.
All right. Well, let's listen to some more of our voters here. Mike Richards joins us from Orlando, Florida. He's a commercial airline pilot, and he joined us in 2020 when we had the roundtable of Florida voters. Mike, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Magna.
And Vadim Ostrovsky joins us from Denver, Colorado. He's a sales manager originally from Ukraine, and he joined us previously in our roundtable of newly naturalized U.S. citizens. Vadim, welcome back to you.
Thank you, Magna.
Well, so Lucas, I'm going to hand it back to you. What do you want to hear first from Mike and Vadim?
Well, I wonder if maybe we ought to start in the same place and talking about what their experience of last week's events were. What emotions did it evoke to see the Capitol attacked the way it was?
Vadim, I'll let you go first.
Yes, thank you so much. And I'm just so excited to be here. Appreciate the opportunity to speak up. And what I felt was maybe I'll give just a little bit of context. I came to the United States when I was 16 by myself as an exchange student. And ever since then, I really fell in love with America for everything that it stands for. And I've had a fortune to where I've been able to spend quite considerable amount of time in other countries as well. And every time coming back to the United States, this is where I felt safe. As soon as I crossed the border, as soon as I had gotten off the plane and went through security, I felt like I could breathe easier. And that was after living in countries, civilized, I don't want to say civilized, not the right word, but Western countries like Australia, Germany, Austria. Even there, I did not always felt as safe as I felt here. And I don't know if it was just a perception in my mind, but that's how I felt. And now I feel petrified. I feel terrified. Both of my girlfriend and I, we tend to, be more liberal on issues. And my girlfriend is involved in, online conversations with people trying to, she's really politically involved. So she's talking to people, trying to, shown the other side, or at least explain the view of proverbial left, so to speak, and I'm on the verge of asking her to stop doing that, so we wouldn't get in trouble. It's a really petrified time.
Yeah, Mike, I'm going to come to you in a second, but Vadim, can you just, if you could, share a little bit more specifically what kind of trouble you're concerned about, or what specifically is frightening you right now?
And again, this is all, we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. We all come with our own baggage and history. But I'm half Jewish, and my dad is Jewish, and we grew up in Soviet Union. And as Jewish people, we were not allowed to even practice our religion. There were a series of pogroms that happened in the past in Soviet Russia, in Tsarist Russia. As a matter of fact, in 1991, when the USSR fell apart, about 2.5-3 million people, Jewish people, immigrated to Israel. And that's, you know, that's a half of the population of Israel at that particular time. And that was because of the fear of prosecutions by just by your neighbors. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say that it's in my blood, but I just feel like America is on taking closer steps to anarchy. And it's just really scary. And the speed with which all of this unraveled, not just talking about last week, but talking about 4 years leading up to this, and maybe some things, unresolved things from the past of the United States, but it's all unraveling right in front of our eyes, mm-hmm. with the speed of a freight train. I'm just petrified that we will be singled out in some ways and harmed. And I'm not exaggerating. This is something that keeps me up at night.
I hear you. So, Mike, thanks for listening with us here. Same question, Lucas's question to you. What kind of feelings did the past week or two evoke in you?
I keep thinking that I'm probably not the best person to be answering this question on your radio show, because there's just so many feelings, and I think so many of them are unorthodox or maybe not in line with what a lot of other people perceive. First of all, I was disgusted by the actions of, you know, breaching the Capitol. I don't like seeing my nation's capital get damaged in any way. I want it to be pristine and beautiful for anyone that comes to visit our nation's capital to see it. But beyond that, when speaking of the actual action of the people that broke into the nation's capital, I think that you're talking about a group of people who are mentally ill, who I think we're giving them a little too much credit here, because, you know, one of these guys was wearing a moose helmet or something like that. And other people had these, you know, strange anti-Semitic slogans on T-shirts and stuff like that. And I mean, Lucas, if you went and passed out an IQ test at the nation's capital that day, what would the average score be? It probably wouldn't be very high. So I kind of looked at it through the lens of, this is an incredibly low IQ population, and a lot of mental illness, a lot of, you know, people who in decades past would have been committed to mental institutions. So we had a congregation of a lot of people that just weren't very bright. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing on our TV. And when you tune into CNN, you know, you get Don Lemon telling you, well, if you're one of the 74 million people that voted for Trump, this is what you voted for. This is what you like. And that's not true. That's not what we voted for. That's not what we like. What we saw there were people who are radicalizing themselves on the internet, who are going in places in the internet that I probably don't even know exist, and, you know, coming up with all kinds of crazy ideas. And they all decided to meet and converge in one spot one day. Mm. The stock market went up the same day that this happened, which tells me very smart people on Wall Street looked at that and said, oh, a bunch of nutcases. This wasn't a military takeover of some kind. We didn't lose our democracy. Mm. I still believe our democracy is alive and well. Unfortunately, we don't have the institutions to lock people away for mental illness the way we used to.
Well, Mike, if you just hang on there, and Vadim, I'm going to guess that you have thoughts to share in response to what Mike said. And Lucas, I'm going to ask you to wait here just a second as well, because these conversations are too important. I don't want to rush them, but we are headed towards our next break here. So this hour, we've been inviting back listeners, or voters actually, that we spoke to over the second half of 2020 in our long series of voter roundtables to see how they think about this nation now, about their responses to what happened on January 6th, and And we're trying to see how we can have conversations across some differences and divides. So we'll be back with more. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And this hour, we are turning back to several voters that we talked to over the course of 2020 and trying to see how we have conversations across divides. And I'm helped today by Lucas Johnson. He's executive director of On Being's Civil Conversations and Social Healing Project. And right now, we're also listening to Mike Richards. He's from Orlando, Florida. He voted for President Trump. He was with us previously in our Florida Voters Roundtable. And Vadim Ostrovsky is with us from Denver, Colorado. He's originally from Ukraine and had previously joined us on our newly naturalized citizens roundtable. And Lucas, I'm going to, again, hand the baton back to you because both Mike and Vadim said some very powerfully interesting things before the break. And I'm wondering, Where do we turn next? What's the next question that you would ask, say, to Vadim? What do you want to hear from him?
Well, Vadim, I think the first thing I want to say is just that I feel so sorry that this has evoked so much fear and so much difficulty for you and your girlfriend. I'm sorry that you're having to go through that, and I'm wondering, how do you feel about what Mike is saying? I mean, I feel like, and Mike, I don't want to mischaracterize what you're saying, but I feel like what you were leading us towards was a sense that you said our democracy isn't quite as under siege as people are feeling that it is. And so I'm curious, Vadim, how you what that brings up in you.
Yeah, no, and the beauty of the United States is the fact that we can all have different opinions and we can express them and share them and talk about them. And we have been able to do that at least from the, I guess, end of the Civil War through recent times. And now it's changing. Now, you know, it feels like it's hard to be really honest. But I really appreciate the honesty of Mike's response. Very unique perspective. Didn't think about it that way. However, what I'd like to say is, Tsarist Russia existed for 1,000 years, and the institutions there were shaped for 1,000 years, and then they were brought down. The whole country was brought down to its knees by a small group of revolutionaries led by Vladimir Ilyich Lenin. And if a monster, or not monster, but a titan that went from Dunai all the way to the border of China can be brought down to its knees and really just destroyed by a group of people, then U.S. doesn't stand a chance, unfortunately. And Lenin said one thing that stood out in my mind, and my friend just passed on the quote to me a couple of days ago, but he said there are decades where nothing happens, and then there are weeks where decades happen. And I feel like this is what's happening now, and I feel like we are really on the verge of possibly losing this democracy. And this is unfortunately not a small group of people, radicalized people. We have a Congress lady who's in Congress now, who's a QAnon follower. I daily see in my life people expressing their political views in violent ways, and not wearing a mask to me is a violent expression of whatever it is that you stand for.
Yeah.
It leads to people contracting the disease and dying. It has nothing to do. So the radicalization of American society is much more spread than what people may think.
Well, Vadim, if you forgive me unfortunately, I still have the job of trying to keep track of the time because we're limited by the duration of this radio program. But I just wanted to give Mike a chance to respond, and then we have a couple more voters that we want to hear from. But Mike, what's your response to Vadim?
My response would be these are complicated issues. This too will pass. I don't want to diminish it or say that it's not important, but I would say that our country is facing unique and special challenges that are of more immediate necessity. I think that voters are on both sides are very scared about the future. I think there's a lot of foreboding. And in particular, in the last year, the United States has printed 33% of the money that's in circulation. You know, we are printing a lot of money. We are heavily in debt. And on the other side, we have a climate crisis to deal with. And honestly, the democracy worked. We now have President Biden coming into office. And to me, you know, he can choose divisive things and we could remain a divided country, or really the two most important things that we have to look at are the financial solvency of the country, which is in very bad shape right now, and a climate crisis, which is absolutely accelerating in the wrong direction. So those are the two items that I think our new president has to get involved in. But I think that, you know, if you go to divisive things, if you start saying everybody's a racist and you know, what we want is people working together. And if you want to solve these problems, you want to get to kids when they're young and put them on the same basketball team or track team and get them working together to solve problems. Then they will be adults that come together and solve problems. And ultimately, those two issues are what give people the biggest fear. If you want to lay awake at night, the thing you should lay awake at night about is the fact that your money might not be worth anything in a couple of years, that they've printed so much, it's worthless. Yeah.
Well, Mike Richards from Orlando, Florida, thank you so much for coming back to the show, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Magna.
And Vadim Ostrovsky from Denver, Colorado. Vadim, thank you so very much for coming
back. Thank you so much.
Lucas, as you can tell from each one of these like mini conversations we're having, that we could speak with all of our voters individually for hours. And it does break my heart a little that we can't spend more time with them. But before we get to our last pairing, I did want to ask you, Lucas, how do you advance a conversation, or how do you bring people together when you hear the kinds of differences that you heard between Mike and Vadim? And I'm not talking about political differences. I'm talking about very different views or assessments to even what the problems are or the depth or severity of the problems. If people aren't even seeing the same sense of like these are, we can commonly agree that these are our challenges, how do you bring people together?
Well, I think part of the thing that we have to do is get to a point where we start to recognize that sometimes when we reach the point of sort of empathy with each other, that we will take into account other people's fears, even if they are not our own, right? Mm-hmm. And we start to sort of recognize that those are things to be in conversation with and conversation about. And the more we talk, the more we maybe some of Mike's, you know, trust in our, institutional resilience as a democracy. Maybe Vadim will start to share some of that. And then maybe Mike will start to also appreciate and understand that some of Vadim's fears are warranted, right? And I think the more we're in conversation, the closer we move together, and more importantly, the more we start to take into account other people's experiential realities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part of what we do. And sometimes, you know, there are realities that are too far apart to bridge completely, but that is not always necessary. But what's necessary is that we start to understand and take into account and hold with importance and with, you know, significant regard, their realities.
Yeah. Well, we have, not enough time left, and I do want to give our last pair of voters a chance to have their say at least a little bit. So let me turn now to Bella Delasio. She's a student at George Mason University, and she joined us previously on our roundtable of young voters. Bella, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me back.
And Matt Powell is also with us. He's a Marine veteran and a car salesman, and he had joined us previously for, I believe, I can't keep it all straight now. Matt, I think we had you back for when we had you on for our voters who had voted for President Trump in 2016. But welcome back to the show, Matt.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I'm just going to start with both of you. And we only have a few, like just 3 or 4 minutes left. And I'm sorry to both of you, Bella and Matt. But I'd like to actually just hear you guys briefly answer the question that Lucas has started everyone off with, which is what feelings were evoked in you last week as you saw what you did in the Capitol? Bella, just I'll go to you first.
Okay. January 6th, when I woke up and I saw these people raging the Capitol, a place where, you know, I go to school and love to just walk around, I was in total fear and shock. It felt like a place that I thought was one place going to be safe and the whole country would be there. And honestly, like seeing the Congress members going through the same thing students often go through at school and having to hide and shelter from an attack and people with guns was just so scary. And just seeing that threat to our democracy, it just left me with so much fear.
And Matt, what about you?
Just absolute disbelief. You know, I've been to the Capitol many, many times. I've been, you know, to D.C. I lived just outside of D.C. for a decade and a half. I'm very familiar with the town. And I was in disbelief for two reasons. One, I was in disbelief that it would actually happen. The other part was I've grown terribly cynical of what I see on TV. I couldn't believe the images that I was seeing were the only images to be seen.
Well, Lucas, I'm gonna turn to you, and I think we have a chance for you to ask both Bella and Matt one question before we're gonna have to basically wrap up the show. But what do you want to hear from them?
I'm curious from both of you, knowing that we have a limited amount of time. I want to go back to the question that I asked with our first voters. In order for us to be the country that we hope to become, what do you think we need from each other?
Matt, you go first.
We need something that I experience daily. I speak to there's a couple folks that I work with that we do not share ideologies, but we have decent conversations and we have decent fact-based conversations. And unfortunately, we don't live in a place or a time where we receive facts. And my whole perspective on this is I think pretty valid. I grew up in a home where my father was a sports and a news broadcaster for 35 years. And there used to be an absolute difference between news and commentary. And today, commentary is the news, and there's a little bit of, you know, selected video and sound bites and things to go along with it. There's just not enough truth being disseminated on a regular basis. And I'll take you back to 2001 for 9/11. With it, immediately, we saw images constantly about what happened. And then within days, it was slowed down and we saw none. And the press took the position that we shouldn't see these daily because it just made us all mad. Well, now all we get are those type of images all the time. And I honestly believe it is to perpetuate a divide. Mm. The leading phrase in the news business is, if it bleeds, it leads. And if that's all we see, and if that's all we do, and we fail to do our own research, and we fail to go look for anything other than what we see in front of our face, that's where we can't have common conversations.
Mm. Well, Bella, how would you answer that question?
I think in order to take a step in the future to unify our country, I think first and foremost, we have to address the issue of white supremacy and make sure that, everyone agrees that, this is a blatant problem and it's something that has plagued our nation for so long to deprive the rights of others. And I think that it's hard sometimes when you're trying to argue with someone about your basic human right, like for a young person or people in general to not have the right to not be shot in their community or for someone to have the right to health care. And those are things that you feel like you should just, naturally be entitled to. But other people see this a different way and see it as a debate. And that's something that has caused like a lot of friction in our nation. And I think that everyone has their own experience and we can't just live our life thinking that our experience is the only experience to be felt. So if we really just listen to each other and say, okay, well, I can't, negate their experience. That was their experience. I can learn from it. And that's how we learn from each other. And that's how we can take steps in unifying our country again.
Well, Bella D'Alessio, student at George Mason University, thank you so much for coming back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Matt Powell, Marine veteran and car salesman. Matt, thank you so much for coming back as well.
I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Lucas, we have, no joke, 60 seconds left. I wanted to be able to have a little bit more time with you to help us think through all that we've heard. We don't have that time, but I did want to just let you give us a last thought. People can talk with each other. We just have to figure out a way to have more of that happen in American life.
Yeah, we do. And I think it's important for us to realize that we don't really have the option to live apart from each other. I think some of the times we engage with each other as if, we're engaging in sort of disposable, dispensable people. And that's not really the reality of our circumstances. And so I think that we can have those conversations. And I think the other thing that's important for us is that we have to nurture the good, even as much as we try to deal with the bad, right? We have to encourage and nurture those things that are right about our societies and our relationships and our lives. And that's a part of how we'll be a better country.
Well, Lucas Johnson, Executive Director of On Being Civil Conversation and Social Healing Project, thank you so much for being by my side for this hour. Thank you.
Thank you, Meghna. It was an honor.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.